going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
Welcome back to the latest edition of The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I am Bruce Feldman, joined as always by my colleague, Stuart Mandel. We are coming to you guys the morning after what felt like a pretty full college football Saturday. Lots of SEC, some more wild, crazy stuff from the Big 12. Stu, does this feel probably like what you remember college football feeling like on a Sunday morning?
It was awesome. And I think that the best indication of that this was actually a real college football Saturday is that when it gets to the end of the night, like usually I have trouble falling asleep because my head is still spinning and I'm still kind of amped up from everything, trying to process everything. That was not the case the last couple weeks. I did not have that rush at any point, but I did certainly on Saturday, because not just did we have games back, big games back, but to have the defending national champs and regular playoff team Oklahoma both go down in big upsets really just made this like, oh yeah, this is what college football Saturday feels like.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty crazy. I gotta admit, like, the Oklahoma game, you and I remembered your note. Like, full disclosure, Stu sends the note of, these are the games I think we should pick this week. I don't know if he sends it Sunday afternoon or Monday, and it includes the spreads. And at one point, I think he had said, I'm going to only include K-State Oklahoma, because the spread was so big, it was minus 28, because it's the big noon kickoff game. So it was a nod to my employer or whatever. Well, and that game turned out to be wild. And Chris Klieman from K-State got Oklahoma again. The thing that to me was kind of a real head turner here was twofold. One, K-State had been dealing with a lot of issues related to COVID. Seven guys on their two deep were going to be out for this game. They looked really bad the last time we saw them against an Arkansas State team that was depleted itself by COVID, right? So you had that. And then I think what was a little more different with the Oklahoma game to me than even LSU-Mississippi State was I was thinking Oklahoma's a playoff contender team. Should be much better on defense. They expected they'd be much better on defense. And then here it was. It just felt, except for the part where you're breaking in a young quarterback as opposed to a new quarterback, and there were some issues with Spencer Rattler and the offensive line, but just it was the same. It felt like the same old story for when Oklahoma struggles. The defense really just didn't show up, I felt like.
And in this case, Oklahoma did lead 28-7. It did feel like this was going to be exactly the game you would expect from a 28-point favorite against a team that was missing a lot of key players. And then it just completely changed. And you mentioned the defense. Obviously, that remains the Achilles heel for the Sooners. But I think the thing that really surprised me was, I mean, it's going to be easy for people to say, oh, Spencer Rattler, he's not as good as the guys before him. He's not ready. But he threw three interceptions. But they could not protect him. K-State came after him in the fourth quarter, and they couldn't protect him, and he started making bad throws. And it just feels very different from last year's K-State-Oklahoma upset, where that was later in the season. To that point, Oklahoma had looked great. Jalen Hurts had looked great. And, you know, people tried to play the, oh, they're never going to make the playoff thing. And I said, I think K-State might actually end up being pretty decent, and if they're a 12-1 Big 12 champ, they'll be fine. And that was the case. In this case, for this to be happen in their first Big 12 game, and the Big 12 has really really struggled to this point, whether it was the Sun Belt, three Sun Belt upsets. We'll get into this in a little bit later probably, but Texas probably should have lost to Texas Tech, gave up 56 points. There's not a lot of reasons to feel great about the Big 12 right now, and so I'm not eliminating Oklahoma. Don't learn that lesson with Ohio State in 2014. Don't eliminate anybody after week two. But it's a very strange season, and their only non-conference game was Missouri State. So from this point forward, they're going to be judged by solely by how much respect the committee has for the Big 12, and I don't know why they would have that respect right now.
Yeah, I think the perception issue, and I wouldn't write off the Big 12 entirely yet, but it's gotten off to about as bad a start as it could be. Like you said, because of those three non-conference Sun Belt losses, and to be honest, you know, a couple of them weren't close, right? And then you have the way Texas looked. I mean, they needed a borderline miracle to win that game in overtime against Texas Tech, who, by the way, had all they could handle with Houston Baptist, right? And so I think the hard thing for them is going to be, like, it's going to be a perception battle of where do you go to build up to people saying, oh, they're just all, you know, kind of mediocre teams who don't play great defense.
And I also think you're going to see, like with K-State, you're going to see teams swing wildly from one game to the next, and we won't know who was unavailable in practice that week that might have contributed to K-State losing to Arkansas State, and who was back this week. And obviously, there was 2 weeks between the games. So, and UNC this week, for instance, is going to they come back. They haven't played in 3 weeks, so it's going to be hard to play the whole, well, they lost to this team, so they couldn't possibly be that good. You just don't know. Some of these are going to be outlier results. Speaking of that, LSU, Mississippi State. To me, this was the moment where it truly felt like college football season. CBS, you know, this was our first SEC on CBS game, the 3:30 Eastern game, and I was intrigued by the matchup all along, but I did think LSU would be fine until we find out Saturday morning that Derek Stingley is going to be out, and it's like, huh. Wrong matchup to lose your All-American cornerback for. We know Texas Tech's going to throw the ball 50 times. It actually ended up being 60. I'm not saying that's the sole reason they lost, but it was one of those things where you're like, huh, why did we all assume LSU would be fine after they were, by the time they played that game, they were down to three starters from last year's national title team. I've never heard of a team having three returning starters. And it showed. KJ Costello just picked them apart. Those cornerbacks struggled. But, man, what a way for Mike Leach to announce his return to the SEC.
Yeah, it was kind of a perfect storm, I think, for Leach and Mississippi State in this regard. You have the defending national champs who are breaking in, like you said, almost everybody is new. So, yeah, they may have talent, but it's young, inexperienced talent. And you're going to see something that you've really never seen. Leach has a quarterback who, while he's new to the SEC, has played a ton of football. Now, he didn't have the benefit of having a full off season to get his timing down with the receivers. But from talking to guys I know on that Mississippi State staff, I mean, they rave about how good KJ Costello has looked in practice and about what he sees and can has a feel for things. He was very accurate on Saturday. And again, I agree with you. It's like Derek Stingley is probably the best defensive player in college football. That's the game they're going to miss him the most. I mean, I know LSU really likes Elias Ricks, who most people thought was the top cornerback recruit in the country this year coming in. But that's his first game. And now you're basically looking at all the cover guys that LSU have are basically freshmen or a little more, you know, Cordell Flott played a lot last year, but it's really a green group. And it dawned on me about late in the first quarter, it's like, as I'm watching Ali Gay, who's a JC transfer defensive end, who played very well for LSU yesterday, but you're looking at it going, with the exception of Jacoby Stevens, like LSU is leaning right now on almost all newcomers. The guys weren't part of the, you know, it's Allie Gay, and it is Jabril Cox, who's the transfer from North Dakota State. And there are these defensive backs who have not played before in a real game. And then there was some other guys like Arik Gilbert, who caught a touchdown pass, was their big tight end. And you got Miles Brennan, who didn't play last year. You got a starting center who came from Harvard. It just was like you're looking at it going, yeah, these guys may be talented, but this is a completely different team. And that's what it looked like. And I think, again, with what Leach does, and I think when KJ got hot, I think that they were just kind of kept building on it. Because after watching it, like Miles Brennan got off to a really rough start, but I didn't think he played that bad, given it's his first start and given, you know, it's been a crazy offseason. I didn't think he... You know, I didn't think he was the reason they lost. I mean, it was just they could not cover receivers running open, whether it was Kylin Hill coming out of the backfield or it was receivers getting downfield. I mean, KJ Costello had to hit some throws downfield, and he kept on hitting them. And, you know, it was a crazy day. I mean, it was at one point, and I don't know if this is in real time exactly how it matched up, but like, you had Georgia with its hands full at Arkansas in the first half. And, like, who saw that coming? You know, it was just kind of a – and maybe it's going to be that kind of year where you just, like you said, you're going to see wild swings from one team to the – 1 week to the next from certain teams. But, I mean, it just felt like we were watching a lot of crazy that's going to probably be the norm this fall.
So not to brag, but I did – kind of have a sense that the KJ Costello Mike Leach story would be a thing, and did that story last week. Now, I had the advantage of, you know, I watched KJ Costello quite a bit at Stanford. And, you know, in the lead to that story I wrote last week, I mentioned this game in 2018. Both Stanford and Washington State were ranked teams. Minshew Mania was starting to take off. And it was a duel between Minshew and Costello. Costello threw four touchdowns that night. Minshew then leads them to the game-winning field goal. But that game was on Pac-12 Network. Neither of those schools are, you know, schools that people in other parts of the country make a point to watch anyway. So it wouldn't surprise me if most people east of the Rockies have never even seen KJ Costello play. And then last year he was injured so much he just fell off the map completely. But I just kept saying, like, that's a pretty important when it happened, I think in February, like, that's a pretty big deal that he's getting an all Pac-12 quarterback to come in and run that offense. Now, I didn't think he was going to throw for 630 yards in his first start by any means. I thought they might struggle because of what you said earlier. You know, completely new offense. Mississippi State last year was a running team. Completely new offense, and they didn't have a spring practice to install the offense. But kudos to them. They clearly he clearly picked it up very quickly, and who knows? Certainly that gives me more confidence that Mississippi State could have a decent season this year. I had cannot written them off, but I don't know if that means they're going to rise up, and who knows, right? I mean, Leach's teams are always pretty unpredictable from 1 week to the next. I'd be a little more worried for LSU. I think it's clear that this is not remotely the 2019 team. It's a total restart at a lot of positions. Probably the most demoralizing thing is that they really talked up Bo Pelini and him bringing back the 4-3, and they're going to be so much more aggressive on defense, and it just completely backfired. You know, it seemed like once he lost Stingley, he didn't adjust, and he still had the corners playing press coverage most of the time, and they just kept getting beat over the top.
Yeah, like I said, I think that was when you miss your best player and you're really the only corner that has considerable experience, that showed up big, and I think that was that ultimately became their undoing on week one. What else stood out to you besides maybe the best player in the SEC this year is a tight end, and that's Kyle Pitts at Florida, who just look, Lane Kiffin's going to be fun at Ole Miss. He's got some players to work with on offense. They don't have much on defense, and I think Florida really exposed that, if there was any doubt of that.
Back to the podcast in a second, but first, Bruce, a word about one of our sponsors, Artifact.
So, Stu, Artifact sets you up with one of their professional interviewers to capture stories about the important people or things in life. Think about it like your own favorite podcast, but about whatever you want. You can do things like have them interview your parents about what their lives were like before you were born, or a birthday gift for your significant other, or have them interview close friends about her and the importance of their relationship. There's all sorts of ways to use Artifact.
And in fact, you and I used Artifact to do a podcast episode where we were interviewed about our friendship and meeting back at ESPN Magazine in 1998 and the origins of the Audible. You can listen to that episode, by the way, at heyartifact.com/audible.
And the other thing is, not to get cheesy, but like, we've both known each other since we were single, and then we both eventually got married and we both had children, and we've, you know, I think that's at the end of the day, like, that's a much deeper bond than college football.
Here's how it works for you. Go to heyartifact.com, tell them a few basic things about what you want the Artifact to be about. And then what we did was we answered a few pre-interview questions, scheduled the interview. The whole thing only took a few minutes. In our interview, it was about 30 minutes long. It was easy. You just call in over your phone from your living room. From there, Artifact's professional editors and sound engineers take care of the edit, and the final product is great. You can listen to it for yourself at heyartifact.com/audible. And you can see great examples of how people use Artifact to start your own at heyartifact.com. So use promo code Audible and get $40 off your episode. Again, heyartifact.com/audible.
Yeah, Kyle Trask looked great. Kyle Pitts is a monster. Look, I've been underestimating Florida all offseason. I thought the hype had gotten a little out of control. You picked them to go to the playoff. But Kyle Trask, you know, I think the storyline around him last year, it was actually surprising to see he was the highest rated passer coming back in the SEC, but he looked even better, I think, than at any point he did last season. Now, contrast that with Georgia, the team that I would have assumed would have been the pick in the SEC East, who, what, a month ago, maybe a little more, seemed like they had like the greatest luxury you could possibly have at the quarterback position to have your choice of Jamie Newman or JT Daniels. The cascade of events that had to take place for Georgia to be down 7-5 at halftime to Arkansas, one of the worst defenses in the country last season, and have to bring in Stetson Bennett to rescue them. It's quite a drama for 1 week into the season for Georgia. And by the way, they got to turn around and play Auburn this week, who looked pretty good against Kentucky.
Right. So I think there was a laundry list, as you said, of challenges here. And first of all, it wasn't just the quarterback issue. You know, their offensive line, especially on the right side of the line, looked pretty shaky. And I think that hurt. You had, I think, 11 penalties. That's going to hurt you if you can't get anything really going. We'll find out what's going to happen with JT Daniels. I had heard that he had maybe another procedure in January, and maybe that's part of what has taken a little while for him to get cleared. I'm not sure. You know, I think there's a lot of people who watch USC who aren't totally sold that he was going to come in and be the five-star guy had been hyped to be. We'll see how he ends up fitting there. It's like, I don't want to go into the overreaction mode and say, well, because they played a horrific first half and had their hands full for a while with Arkansas, that means they can't still win the SEC or certainly the SEC East. I mean, I was picking Florida because I just felt a lot more confidence in Florida's offensive setup than what I saw from Georgia coming into this year. But they still have really good players on defense, and that can carry you a long way, especially in the SEC. And look, I mean, Kirby Smart's had had Auburn's number for a while, so we'll see if that holds true or not. At least in terms of, you know, how they play against Gus Malzahn, we'll see. I mean, it wasn't. I don't know. I guess the question is going to be, and we'll get ahead of ourselves in this, is can Auburn run the ball against Georgia? I think that will be as much of a telltale sign as what we're going to see from Georgia on the other side of the ball, just because I don't know if Auburn's offensive line is going to be good enough right now to see that defense. But it's good that we're talking about these kind of in the weeds things, I feel like, at this point.
Yes, and just to go further in the weeds real quick to clarify on Georgia's QB situation, yes, JT Daniels has not been cleared to play a game yet, but he did go through preseason camp, and by all indications, Dwan Mathis wasn't starting just because JT Daniels wasn't cleared. He beat him out, and so for Kirby to have to bench him midway through the second quarter of his first start was not an ideal way to start the season. I watched most of that Kentucky-Auburn game, and Bo Nix looked pretty good. No question, Seth Williams is a great receiver. That being said, I think people who are going to look at the final score, 29-13, and think that Auburn just manhandled them, that wasn't the case. It was a even 15-13 game well into the fourth quarter, and then Kentucky just self-destructed and had a fumble deep in their own territory that Auburn cashed in, and then a bizarre fake punt from their own 30. So the punter was standing around his 15, doesn't get it, and then Auburn, you know, gets another short fielded touchdown. And that's not to mention the you know, heinous officiating mistake that led to a touchdown being wiped off the board for Kentucky shortly before halftime. I'm not saying Auburn wouldn't have still beaten them, but it wasn't like they destroyed Kentucky. So Georgia-Auburn, I assume, is the showcase game this coming week. Two top 10 teams, and no idea as we're sitting here talking who would win that game.
But since you're talking bizarre, Stu, I think we should circle back to the Big 12 and our friend Tim Brando's game with Spencer Tillman Saturday afternoon. And you're watching this where I think Texas was up at least by double digits, and there was a bunch of special teams. I don't want to say gaffes, but there was, you know, because Texas Tech pulled off a great onside kick right up the middle, and then there was just, you wrote about this on Saturday on Sunday morning in your column on The Athletic about, yeah, Tom Herman basically fired most of his staff and has new coordinators, but man, it looked very similar, and it did look very similar. Now look, it's only their second game of the year, and it's, you know, that is the kind of, you know, some of these changes you're not going to expect to happen overnight. But how much confidence do you have in Texas as a, not just to win the Big 12, but anything, to be a legitimate, like, top five, top 10 caliber team?
I'm not going to rule out them winning the Big 12, given Oklahoma already has an L in Big 12 play. It did seem like we were watching the same exact team, where Sam Ellinger is the whole offense. I'm still puzzled why Tom Herman has yet to get an elite running back in there. Now, it's only the, you know, maybe the freshman Bijan Robinson still could develop. It's still very early in his season.
I mean, he's a guy that everybody wanted, and the things I've heard out of Austin is they think he really is that guy. So let's not, you know, dismiss that. But I don't even think that's the issue. I just think the issue still comes back to just so defense.
You just don't see so Herman's been there 4 years now, so this is all his recruits, and you know, year after year, highly rated recruits, and you just don't see the big time that guy's definitely going to be in the NFL defensive players outside of maybe one or two. Certainly they continue to struggle in the secondary. Alan Bowman had some really nice touchdown throws against them. And let's be honest, like, the game, they had lost that game. I mean, it was, you had to, the Texas Tech, like, that was an Atlanta Falcons type collapse at the end. It was a 15-point game with 3 minutes left. And Texas gets the touchdown, gets the onside kick, and one of those onside kicks that bounces so far downfield that you're already well into the other team's territory, and then the two-point touchdown, the two-point conversion, and the win in overtime, which ended on a Texas Tech fumble. So, I mean, they could very easily be 0-1 right now, too. Imagine if OU and Texas both lost their first Big 12 games.
Could be 1-1.
No, I meant in conference.
Okay, sorry. All right, Stu, I want to pivot to what used to be the game of the year for a long time in college football. And it hasn't been that for a while because both programs sputtered. But now Miami definitely is better. I know that they are. I am, as I've said many times on here, I'm not saying Miami's back until there's a parade. But Miami is definitely better. They are good on defense, which they've pretty much been since Manny Diaz has been there. And he hired Rhett Lashley, and the offense is so much better now than it was last year. And De'Arik King fits this system well. They've simplified a lot of things from what they were doing before last year, and I think that's helped their offensive line. They have good skill guys. They have a couple of terrific tight ends. And I don't know, was it like 35-3 against Florida State? I mean, Florida State, this didn't start under Mike Norvell. The decline didn't even start under Willie Taggart. It really started under Jimbo Fisher. And so I'm going to ask you, which stood out to you more, that Miami is looking like a legit top 10 team, or Florida State looks like one of the, I don't know, 10 worst teams in Power 5 right now?
Well, Miami looking like a top 10 team kind of started to take hold the week before against Louisville. So, like, it doesn't surprise me at this point how De'Arik King is looking. I mean, I think they have a legit offense. I don't know why anybody would think otherwise at this point. But so what stood out to me is that, man, how is Florida State so bad? And I realize it was an unusual week. Mike Norvell, obviously, he tested positive. He was not able to be with the team. But still, I mean, now also look back at the fact that they lost to Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech got housed by Syracuse this week. So that's not good either. I was texting with Andy Staples about this. And I'm always reticent to criticize college quarterbacks, so I'm going to couch this. But for James Blackman to still be their starting quarterback 4 years later, how did he not go out? I mean, there's the college quarterback free agency is a real thing now. Miami went and got one. Mississippi State went and got one. How do you not go out and get a grad transfer that could at least have the chance to win your starting job? Because the guy that has it now has a ceiling. Now, it's not just him. Their offensive line remains, for 4 years running now, embarrassing. I think not having Cam Akers back makes a difference. But, yeah, it's Florida State. You have great recruiting cachet, and you could certainly think it would be a program that could bring in some grad transfers that would have an effect. And I don't know. It seems like they're going backward. I think Mike Norvell has his work cut out. I think the cumulative effect of all those coaching changes in such a short time is catching up to them. And so now it's like, you know, the past 2 years, it's been a struggle to get bowl eligible. This last year they did. This year, it's going to be a struggle to win more than a few games.
Yeah, it's fascinating because as much as, you know, we talk about recruiting and recruiting rankings, this is one of the prime examples. I think Texas to a much lesser degree, but this is one of those examples of where you're looking at it and going, man, this is what, how is this translated? And I think some of it is so much coaching turnover, and it's not just head coaches, it's position coaches. But I mean, 5 years ago, they had the number 3 ranked recruiting class in the country. 4 years ago, it was the number 6 ranked recruiting class in the country. And then I think the year after that, it was number 10 or 11. I mean, so it's not like this is somebody going to point to, oh, this is what Iowa State is getting or this is what Washington State is getting. I mean, they had a bunch of these guys would be juniors and seniors came from, you know, top 6 classes. And it just, and there are pockets of, you know, athleticism. Certainly Marvin Wilson, before he got tossed from the game yesterday or last night, you know, he can be a dominant force, but just you look at it and go, man, this has just gotten so bad. And I keep you keep wondering where is the bottom. And I kind of feel like some years down the road, maybe it's 2 years, maybe it's 4 years, and maybe Mike Norvell will be the coach for this. But you will see some TV feature about how this was the rock bottom for Florida State. And I don't know what you, I assume.
I hope so for their sake.
Yeah.
I hope so for their sake. I mean, it doesn't get any more embarrassing to lose 52-10 to your arch rival. And by the way, Florida State under Jimbo won 7 straight against Miami. And now, starting with Jimbo's last season, they've lost 4 straight to Miami. And just the fact that they were both in rough shape the last couple of years. So it's got to be really galling for a Florida State fan to see, well, Miami did it. Miami transformed itself from last season to this year. How come we can't do something like that? It'll be interesting to watch going forward how long it takes Norvell to dig them out of that. Any other teams? Yeah, I'll give you one we should probably talk about. Credit to Virginia Tech. 23 players they were missing. And this is, I think, the first time I've seen this with a team so far this year where they were even down several assistant coaches, including their new defensive coordinator, for, you know, either positive tests or quarantine. And they housed NC State despite that.
Did you watch that game, Stu?
I can't say I watched that game. Did you watch that game?
I did not. But this is going to be the norm, I think.
Which part? The guys missing, or the guys missing and you still win handily?
I think it's going to be the part where you're going to have a lot of just like, not giving up on a team, but you just won't know what to make of a lot of these teams, especially if they're teams that you're not, you didn't see them the week before. You're just kind of seeing tweets about how many cases they have or how many guys are in contact tracing or whatever. And I just think that's going to be 2020 in college football.
And this was Virginia Tech's first game. They'd had to deal with postponements. They'd had two games postponed already. So, yes, I think that is going to be the norm. A team that's having a really weird season, BYU, if you stayed up and watched the late night game, I mean, they couldn't look better in their first two games. Obviously, it's just Navy and Troy. And an interesting storyline for me there is they only have 8 games on their schedule. So they only have so many chances to impress. And it's not a good schedule at all. I mean, it's whoever they could get. However, when the Mountain West announced they were coming back last week, Craig Thompson, the commissioner, indicated that Boise State would be allowed to play a non-conference game, specifically BYU, once the schedule comes together. So that would be a big boost for BYU to actually at least play one game against a pretty respected opponent. They're not going to contend for the playoff, but if they go undefeated, could they rise high enough to go to a major bowl? That would be something to keep an eye on. We talked about after the Navy game, you had predicted they were going to have a really good offense, and boy, do they.
I have to admit, I didn't get to see much of that game. I saw them like one big play, and then all of a sudden, I want to say it was like 8:40 our time at night, and I could not keep my eyes open. You know, like my son's trying to watch the end of the basketball game, and I'm struggling. I think I got home at maybe, because the Texas game went so long, I left Fox right after that. And these 4 a.m. wake-up calls are rough. I mean, I got to admit, it's like your day starts so fast, and you go from like 0 to 100. And then after, I think some of it is because I drink so much coffee in the morning now to get on Saturdays because of our big noon kickoff show. And I was like, man, I'm not traveling anymore. Now I'm still pooped on Saturday night. And it was like, it's just because I think just getting up so early to prepare for the show. And so I did not see much of that game at all. I probably saw basically a little of the first quarter. And I'm like, man, what's this going to be like once we have Pac-12 after dark? I may have to take a nap in the afternoon at some point.
That's going to be a real challenge for you because you are going to want to watch those Pac-12 after dark games. You're basically going to start your day at 4 a.m. and you'll probably need to be locked in until 11:30 p.m. So that's like a 20-hour day. But hey, at least you didn't nod off on television like Reggie Bush.
Yes, my buddy Reggie. And at some point, so those guys were going to be on set for the end of the Iowa State TCU game, and then also had to do I forgot it was like a halftime or something else. And so they're out there for a while waiting to get to the end of that. And I was not out there when this happened, but they caught him nodding off. And as they did, the same production crew, as they did with Frank Thomas, I guess, at some point, like a couple of years earlier. So Reggie was a good sport about it. But yeah, it's those 4 a.m. wake-up calls are getting the best of a lot of us. And they may not be getting the best of Brady Quinn, because Brady's comes over from East Coast time, so it's 7 a.m. Same thing with Urban. It's 7 a.m. for him. But from out here for us, it's a little bit of a challenge at times, I guess. But it's a good problem to have.
Gotta say, I did a triple take when Urban, you know, I just happened to have it on. And when they cut to the studio, I think right after the Oklahoma game or maybe halftime of the Texas game. And he flat out said, and look, it's in keeping with how he was as a coach. He's the hyperbole. He said, yeah, he goes, credit to Chris Klieman, but Oklahoma, you know, they're done. There's no way they can make the playoff. I was like, damn, that's quite a statement, you know, from coaches. You know, ex-coaches tend to be not necessarily have the most over-the-top opinions. But also I was like, huh. My lesson on that was learned from his own team when they lost to Virginia Tech in 2014. I remember being in the green room, the avocado room with you guys. We were all like, the Big Ten's done. Big Ten's never going to make the playoff now. They'll never overcome this. And they won the national title. So not predicting that for Oklahoma necessarily, but never say never.
Back to the show in just a minute, but first, talking about erectile dysfunction is not easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it's easy to talk about it. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to roman.com/grits and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today and connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/grits today. If you're approved, you'll get $15 off your first ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/grits. GetRoman.com/grits.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, last thing is not about the games yesterday. It's about a story Bruce ran that went up on Monday about Pat McAfee that just blew up. It's one of the most read stories that the Athletic has ever done in amongst the college football staff. And it even got the attention of a certain future Hall of Fame NFL quarterback. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I started working on the Pat McAfee story probably a month earlier and felt like, all right, I know a lot of people who either coached or played at West Virginia in that era. I bet I can get some good stories. And the stories were so much even better than I had hoped. And then I said, I reached out to Pat over DM. I can't say I know him particularly well. He invited me on his show probably a month or so ago. So I said, hey, do you have like 10, 15 minutes? And 10, 15 minutes turned into like an hour and 15 minutes. And it was almost all phenomenal stuff. He's just a really entertaining personality, and he's very engaging, and he's also really, really smart, which probably sometimes is the underrated part of that because of his personality. But anyway, so the story went out, and I knew it was going to do pretty well. I just felt like, all right, when you know you have really good stuff, you know it's going to resonate. never mind that it goes in with a huge, you know, a guy has like 2 million followers and has a big YouTube show. So story goes up and it's getting a lot of buzz. And it, like you said, it takes off like a rocket ship in terms of the traction it's getting for our business. And I'm watching his show, which I do, you know, on the, you know, sometimes have on the background. And Aaron Rodgers is going to be a guest. And I've been an Aaron Rodgers guy since he was at Cal and got to know him a little bit. Well, anyway, at one point I was doing something. I heard him talk about how far can you throw a football, Aaron, and went from there to like criticisms of NFL teams after like one or two games. And then out of the blue, he goes, "Hey, great story by Bruce Feldman about you." And I was like, did I just imagine that? And then they started talking about it. And so that definitely helped the story get even more traction. And I appreciate Aaron Rodgers for saying that. I never was expecting it. And so that was very cool. And the response to the story has been really, really cool about it. And special hat tip to our colleagues, Jason Kersey and Chris Kamrani. They don't know this or didn't know this at the time, but actually the idea of that story, or like kind of the seed of the idea, came from a couple of stories that they had done, which got me thinking in the middle of the pandemic a little outside the box. Kamrani had done a story on our friend Spencer Hall, and I was thinking of whose personality and who's kind of a big niche person who I think would make for a fascinating story, and that's how I arrived on it, and I'm glad I did. So I appreciate for all the people who have read the story and responded to it. It's been really cool to see something you work on get that kind of reaction.
I think you said to me, you know, the day it happened, that I said, did you know that Aaron Rodgers, you know, knows your name? And you know, you said, yeah, but like, but I'm still amazed that he was it a 6,000 word story?
Yeah, it was a 6,000 word story. And you know, like usually NFL players are off on Tuesdays, but like he must have read it earlier in the morning because it wasn't even up that long. So for an NFL quarterback to read a 6,000 word story on something that just it's kind of random, just kind of cool to hear, at least as a writer.
Most important takeaway, of course, Aaron Rodgers is a subscriber to The Athletic.
So what are you waiting for if you are not? That's right.
If it's good enough for Aaron Rodgers, it should be good enough for you. And right now, it's only $1 a month. Click on any story on The Athletic, preferably my final thoughts column on Sunday morning, and you can join us. You want to get to a couple of mailbag questions real quick?
Okay, let's do it.
All right, as always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. This is from, I picked this one, Bruce, because it picks up on an idea that you were really behind earlier in the, you know, period where we didn't know if we were going to play football or not. Bill in San Diego, Stu and Bruce, with the Mountain West and the MAC potentially returning this fall and playing abbreviated schedules and no payout games against Power 5 competition, wouldn't it make more sense to play in the spring? More games, less TV competition, potentially some fans in the stadium. Seems like a no-brainer for the MAC and possibly the MWC. Am I wrong?
Yeah, the Mountain West one is to me the most intriguing and curious of all this, because the Mountain West is the one who has the most challenging local and state restrictions. And some of those are still in place. Hawaii, New Mexico, Fresno State. I had talked to some of the coaches at Fresno State over the weekend for our Big Noon Kickoff show. They aren't even allowed to practice yet. Now they're hoping to get a full go and all clear by Tuesday. But remember, they're less than a month away from playing games. And so they're in the same footprint as the Pac-12, largely, with some variance, obviously. But and the Pac-12 is basically starting 2 weeks later. So we'll see how this works out. They're testing 3 days a week. That's the plan, three times a week. So I don't know. I think it's hard for some of these other leagues to sit and watch everybody else play in FBS and make the determination, well, they're all playing, we're going to still hold off on the spring. I think just for the rest of FBS, that's a really hard optic for them. And right now, there's only three schools that are not expecting to play in of the 130 in FBS, and that's Old Dominion, UConn, and New Mexico State.
Yeah, I think I referred, it's FOMO, and I was surprised how many people didn't know what that stands for, fear of missing out. Because I, as all by all indications, until the Big Ten decided to come back, those other three had no intention of coming back. The Pac-12 was talking about maybe Thanksgiving. I don't think Mountain West and MAC were talking about it at all. And then all of a sudden, you know, government clearances and stuff weren't necessarily as big a hurdle as they seemed like they were. And I think the one I'm most surprised about is the MAC, because all throughout this, I mean, it's just been so clear the financial difficulties a lot of their schools have. And now you're going to have to spend, I mean, they're doing four times a week antigen testing. You know, that's going to cost millions of dollars. So, but I guess it was, and they're only going to play six games, but they felt like it was important to basically not be on an island. And once it was clear the other ones were going to do it, we got to do it too. So at the end of the day, it's going to result in a beginning November 4th. That's the night, the Wednesday night, very fittingly, that MACtion comes back. Beginning November 4th through December 19th, we will actually have all of the conferences playing. And from Rob Daniels, gentlemen, love the pod, an excellent companion on my walks in the park. Thank you, Rob. Question, with bowl games uncertain at best and schedules generally light on non-conference games, will motivation be an especially large challenge for Power 5 coaches as this unusual season progresses? That's been something I've been wondering. Like, it took so much buy-in to get these guys to stay disciplined and you know, keep the season going. And I think they all wanted to play, and that was the carrot. What happens once your team starts 1-4?
It's a great question. Nobody knows the answer. I know that is a concern for some coaches and certainly some ADs. I mean, I think I told this story a couple of, maybe a week or so ago. One of the ADs I talked to said, you know, you have this challenge where you win a big game, your guys want to celebrate. And what normally celebrating on a Saturday night is very different than what they feel they should be doing now in terms of being responsible. And what responsibility in the era of COVID in 2020 is very different than what it normally is. And so that is that piece of it. And then the other piece, obviously, is the letdown of what the season starts to translate to. And I definitely think that is a concern of something people are going to have to monitor. I mean, you can have daily testing, but that doesn't mean that if somebody brings something in, it can't, you can hopefully minimize some of the issues, but it doesn't mean all those issues are going to go away. So that's certainly a factor from what I've heard from some coaches right now, thinking about how does this look down the road.
And remember, free year of eligibility, that was put in specifically so that guys wouldn't feel like, well, we're only going to play eight games this year, I don't want to waste it, you know, I don't want to waste the season eligibility on this. So no matter how many or how few games your team plays, you get that year of eligibility back. But could it work the other way where five, six games in the season, somebody says, okay, I'm opting out, and they are guaranteed, you know, that if they say it's for COVID reasons, then they have to honor your scholarship. You didn't waste a year of eligibility. I don't know. It's the great unknown. Well, we won't know how it's going to play out till the situation arises. But yet another thing to be concerned about in this most unusual of seasons. You can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. We're starting to realize it's a little tricky with the recording on Sunday mornings. People just don't have a chance to get questions in after the games. So it may be that we need to start doing our mailbag in the second episode of the week. So send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. We'll see you next time. Jumping off bridges, spinning down hills, and catching air. The dumbest things cause the greatest thrills. It's in the past, now I think